This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 153, Chicken and Mushrooms. Hello, and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I am joined today, this is Michael Martin, by my fabulous co-host, Michael Rowe, on a gorgeous Saturday in the fall. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, and today is a special edition of GamesAtWork.biz on Saturday.
The Saturday edition. Yeah, well, we're Saturday editioning because this was the Thanksgiving week, and this was our recovery from all of the turkey and trimmings, and we are quasi-awake, so that's good for you, and hopefully good for us, too. We shall see.
We shall see.
All right, so we have got some fun things to share with you today and some funny things to share with you today, and we're going to start with Solar City. The first bit here, Michael, is one that you actually watched, I think even live, about the integration between Tesla and SolarCity and the announcement of the roof tiles to collect solar power. What were your original impressions on that?
This is so cool. I mean, the original impressions, so cool.
What about the next impressions?
And the ones after that was, oh, very cool. So we... Our house probably needs to have a new roof put on it in a few years. And when we first had our roof put on, gosh, maybe 14 years ago, so it's about time, we looked at solar at the time, and we really couldn't do it. The direction of our house is the wrong direction. It's not facing north on the roof.
Right, right.
There's a lot of tree cover, etc. But I'm wondering, given the design of these, where the entire roof on all sides becomes solar panels because of the tiles basically being shingles, if it would give enough coverage to actually be worthwhile. And one of the things they talk about during the announcement is that the cost of these panels, these tiles, is about the equivalent of putting a new roof on. Now, when you think about something where the whole roof looks like tile or looks like regular shingles, but the whole thing becomes solar, that is looking really, really cool. And what was amazing about the announcement was they actually were standing in the middle of like three or four houses where they did the announcement, and all the houses around them had these roofs on it. And you really couldn't tell until they showed you the detail of how the panels were designed. You know, they're all a type of glass with the solar mechanism inside. And they just look amazing. You know, whether you want regular shingles, whether you want kind of like a Spanish tile, et cetera, I was blown away the way these looked.
You know, Michael, I was trying to remember when we first saw this about Solar City some couple of years ago, and I think I found it here too. There was something called Project Sunroof that was using Google Earth to determine whether or not your roof would be good for solar panels.
Yep.
And it was only in San Fran and in Boston.
No, it shows my house now, and it's still not a very good roof for it. that's the big problem, right?
Is
I keep looking, going, you know, one day, and no.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's unfortunate, because that I think is really where the excitement can come. Where if the cost is about the same as a roof, the video that was showing that if a 1.2 pound steel ball was dropped on one of these tiles, that it basically is okay, bounces off, and you're fine. You know, so it takes away the concern that, hey, you know, I'm dealing with a bunch of glass on my roof, and it's going to be bad for those reasons and kind of break too easily. So that's a good thing. If you could see a way that there would be enough collecting ability to translate the energy from solar radiation into electricity, because just the efficiency is there, that's the game changer, right?
Yeah. And what I see, according to Project Sunroof, is over 20 years, I would save $3,000. Yeah, and if you look at the picture that I posted in our episode Slack, the one house that really doesn't look like it has a solar capable roof, that's right. Mine.
Yeah,
look all the way around. Everybody else, I
know. Everybody else is looking good.
Right,
across
yellow.
The street.
Yep.
Yeah, those guys are happy.
And part of it is because we really like our tree cover.
Mm-hmm.
So probably if I cut down all the trees, it would be great. But I also like tree cover.
Well, yeah. Or maybe there'd be a way to have a solar tree that you now, the leaves of the tree are made of glass and you could collect and harvest the energy that way.
All the leaves are glass. And the sky is gray.
And the sky is gray. No, wouldn't that be fun? You know, I mean, there's already trees that are, cell towers that kind of masquerade as trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen, like mini wind farm sort of things that look a little bit like trees too. Wouldn't it be interesting if you could create a tree that looked like a tree and kind of behaved like a tree and maybe was flexible a bit like a tree, and instead of the pine needles it would be solar and you could use that to power your house?
Yeah
Be better than having a solar farm maybe in the backyard, right?
Well, if you look at my backyard, there's no solar farm area.
So if you instead look at American Samoa instead of your backyard, you will see that they have a solar farm that was created on the island, and I'm going to mispronounce it, I'm sure, of Ta'au. Which I'm guessing, don't know, that they have now.
Or is it Ta'au?
It could be Ta'au. Could be any variety
of
those.
Could be Ta'au, because there's a T-A apostrophe U. Ta'au.
Yeah. Or Ta'au.
I don't know. I'm not alone.
Whatever the name, how it's pronounced properly, check the show notes. You can see the pictures and the video. In conjunction with the Solar City and Tesla crowd, they have changed this island from being 100% dependent upon diesel fuel to power their generators and create energy for the island, to have it being 100% solar powered. And this is pretty exciting. It's a small island, obviously, so you know you got to start small, but they're able to collect enough energy to power the entire island for 3 days without any solar, without any access directly to the sun, storing via batteries, being able to recharge those batteries, it seems, fully within the span of a good sunny day, and are no longer reliant upon the ship that would have to transport the diesel fuel to the island, to the generators, which would then burn through that fuel and create the electricity the island needs. So I saw this and I thought, wow, this is really interesting, because it's getting the experience in about storing solar energy in high capacity batteries that can be used over time to power the island.
Yes.
And how that can now be impactful for much larger spaces as well.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. And you think about the scale that they're doing it. Now, granted, it's an island within American Samoa. Population is under 1,000 people. So the amount of energy being used and the fact that they're in the middle of an ocean with significant amount of sunlight is, you know, also helping in the economics of it. But the thing that's amazing is they have 60 of the Tesla Powerwalls as the grid where they collect the energy that's then stored. They can run 3 days on that electricity with no sunlight. So that's pretty impressive. And they can charge the entire grid in 7 hours.
Yeah.
So when you think about that and you start scaling it up to where people can start doing that, and, you know, think about, you know, parts of the U.S. Midwest or parts of Europe. I know there's a thing going on in Germany where they're having issues paying for the electric grid because so many people have implemented solar and using the solar energy and feeding it back into the grid that the traditional infrastructure, which was, you know, designed and built and, you know, amortized over 30 or 40 years, is no longer getting the income to come in to pay for it. And you start saying, how do you transition in such a way that those who do not have the solar energy can still have the infrastructure that they need in place versus those who are making the investment for sustainable ongoing energy without burning of fossil fuels? And how do you do that incentive and that balance, right? It's a pretty amazing time that we're actually technologically able to do this. And the question becomes, how do you do this transition sustainably itself?
Well, right. I mean, Germany is a very special case too, where they've made a decision to aggressively move away from nuclear power and into sustainable sources. So you almost begin to ask yourself, at what point in time does the national or regional grid become something that is a thing of the past, kind of like, you know, old rail tracks that are no longer needed for transportation? Because you can get to a point where you can be self-sufficient in terms of your energy needs for electricity, provided that you have the sky and the space to go do this sort of thing. And putting solar on roofs in Germany is super, super common. And right here in North Carolina, I was driving to Pittsburgh just yesterday, and I came across a solar farm that I hadn't seen before. And this state has been one of the more aggressive ones, along with California and Texas, of putting in solar in lots of different spots and places over the last. I think we're on the verge of a pretty major shift, and with the costs coming down and the efficiency going up, we should see. I would feel like in short order, those kind of pains that Germany is experiencing here in the United States and elsewhere around the world too.
Yeah, one of the things, because I've looked at this a couple of different times, one of the things that's going on right now is there's a set of companies in the U.S. that are actually leasing people solar power. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they come in, they install the solar panels on your roof, and the way it's funded is you get reduced cost to grid electricity. That's it. You don't get a battery pack. You don't get power when the power on the grid goes out. And what they are doing is buying your roof in order to sell electricity back to the grid, but you don't get any of the benefit of it, which I find, you know, is interesting as a business model for those companies, but unless people really understand that, it's a little bit disingenuous to the people trying to do the right thing to reduce their own dependency on the grid.
Yeah, well, interesting times to be sure, and we're going to see a lot of new things coming along here. So speaking of reducing dependency on things like, you know, cookbooks and culinary skills in general, we came across a super fun little article from TechCrunch today entitled "No More Pastry Panic. Alexa can now talk you through recipes."
Yeah.
And
this is so funny. I think it's great. It actually is a really good idea, right? Amazon has opened up the Alexa ecosystem and exposed an API where people can build their own interactions on Alexa, right? So there's a company called All Recipes, I believe, is the company, and they've enabled the ability to do, let's call it voice cooking. It's where you yell at the stove saying, hurry up, I'm hungry.
No, it is a sous chef or advice giving kind of solution that would say, all right, I've now done steps 1 through 3 of my 7-step process.
Tell me the next step.
Number 4.
Yep.
Right. Remind me again what it is. My hands are messy. I can't turn the page of the cookbook, or I don't want to touch a touch screen and get that all messy. What's the next thing I'm supposed to do again? So. Yeah, it could be very useful, but at the same time, you know, the video example of this was was one that just made me have to giggle.
Yes.
But the idea, and this is not a new idea by any stretch. You know, what do I have in my fridge? What can I make?
What can you make?
What
do you have in your fridge?
those are the sort of things. Well, right now, lots of leftovers, and I'm very happy. So those are things that you can, we've imagined already for quite some time with smart appliances, knowing because you've kind of checked in barcodes, blah, 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 of what's in the fridge, and it would be able to now suggest things for you.
Yes.
So the particular video that we were watching here, and it's worth watching just for the comedy factor.
Just for this one thing.
Just for this one thing of a woman going, Alexa, I've got chicken and mushrooms in my fridge. What can you help me fix with all recipes on this? And her response
and Alexa goes, chicken and mushrooms.
It's like, oh, Alexa, you've saved the day yet again.
Alexa, I have hamburgers and hot dogs in the fridge. What can you make? How about hamburgers and hot dogs? Yes, yes.
I have toast and eggs in the fridge. What can you make with toast and eggs? How about toast and eggs? Oh, ooh, that was a variation on the theme.
Yes,
I like it.
Yes, you got to sequence it correctly. Yes, this was just too funny. But no, the idea though is good, and really what it shows is, and I was listening to another podcast, and they were talking about the next great UI interface is going to be
GRATE.
No. The next UI interface was going to be augmented reality and artificial intelligence. And what they really meant was a combination of AR and NLP, so natural language processing, right? And this, if you take Alexa and you add to it some AR glasses, now you have that interface. Your hands free. You say, what can I make? It goes chicken and mushrooms. And you go, well, how do I make it? And then you can imagine an AR overlay on your counter showing you how to cut the chicken, how to saute the mushrooms, right? And that is when it's going to get interesting, I think.
Well, and being able to determine that the mushrooms have reached their proper level of sauteness and they need to be taken off the heat.
Yes, sauteness. Right?
Well, you know, you don't want to overcook these things.
You don't want to over saute them.
No.
Because then they become satarama.
All that way, that's where you would want to go.
Yeah, no. Ideal. And that really takes us kind of to the next area, right? Which is, how do we scale AR and VR? Right, because natural language processing, the whole machine intelligence, cognitive technologies, the ability to understand stuff in context, to learn from that and adjust based off of that is interesting. But it comes really powerful when you now overlay that information with a visual representation, either in a virtual or a real world.
Right. And so you're going to an article now that you and I had a little bit of an argument about in our pre-show.
Yes, the fact that all the guys in the pictures are naked.
Yeah, I didn't have an argument about that. That was just weird.
That was really weird.
The place that I had my argument with is that this article rehashes a similar story that we've seen again and again, talking about, oh, you know, we're on the verge of lots of VR and AR stuff, which we kind of been on that verge since 2008.
2006, thank you very much. I mean, yeah. That was really the foundation of this podcast was the virtual reality space, and then we added in with things like Monocle and other overlay AR technologies, right?
Yeah, and I'm still a firm believer that AR will beat VR in a big way.
Yep.
And the article kicking off the concept with and the number of VR headsets and the number of smartphones that represent mobile VR environments, again, you're not going to go wandering around in the real world wearing a set of VR closed in ski goggles and tripping over stuff. You know, you will do some of that, but it's going to be done in a much more controlled your body environment. And this is, to me, the most crucial reason why AR is going to be the winner in the marketplace.
Well, not only that, because one, you do want to see it in the real world, but the technology to actually make it, quote, interact with the real world, right? So you know, one of the things that people have been talking about was that Pokemon Go was going to kick off the real revolution of augmented reality. And let's face it, Pokemon Go is not augmented reality. It's an overlay. Reality is understanding the physical space and reacting to it. And understanding, you know, if I'm going to show a visual overlay that I understand that I'm showing a counter, that there's a cutting board on it, and that there's a piece of chicken on that, right? So that I can make my chicken and mushrooms. And one of the other aspects that they talk about here in this article is, and this is where we had a discussion, was around getting the bandwidth necessary to do meaningful AR and VR. And that is more than just a wired headset sitting in an office or in the house, but it's things like 5G, which is driving significant bandwidth everywhere, right? Now, it's not been deployed everywhere yet. It's just starting its deployment on a global scale. And there's only like one or two pilots going on. But this is the ability to give you gigabit access to data in an untethered environment. And now when you take that into an AR environment, you have the ability to render the real world and put the augmented technology on top of it in a meaningful way. And not just for me as an individual, but for the two of us in the same augmented space, so that we can both see the fact that the mushrooms are sitting on there, and this is how you put them in the frying pan.
So a collaborative cooking experience.
Yeah, and to make sure that they're appropriately connected for the sauteness.
Yeah, so my view of that is that the bandwidth, while an enabler and will make things even better, is not necessary to the technology. There's enough onboard compute power in today's smartphones or tablets or computers at large that you don't really need that. You can cache most of it. That's not the thing that's preventing this from coming around.
Yeah,
to me, what's preventing it is
the
bigger.
Strongly disagree, because I can cache, but I can't cache real time. In order to cache real time, I need to push the bandwidth, and that's where it comes in.
Yeah, so I would say that the delivery mechanism of the augmented reality into the real space is where life gets really interesting. So if you look at what's been done in holography, how do you even say that? I don't know.
I think holography sounds good. It doesn't sound like a real word, but it sounds good.
No, but if you look at what's been able to be done there, holography?
I don't know. We should call Veronica Belmont.
We should call a linguist is really who we should be calling.
Yes, because if
today
you ever listen to
bad for all the pronunciations
on Sword and Laser, it's like, how can we butcher this word? Holography.
Yeah. So my point is that wearing glasses that allow for that overlay on top of reality can be something that can be done in a relatively low bandwidth manner, right? You don't need real fidelity that's going to confuse people about what's real and what isn't. We'll get there, and that'll be some fun discussions, in terms of, science fiction writing, into the future. I would see that you could have a camera/projector pair that you would install in places in your house, or you could install at intersections where you could, have your virtual traffic assistant, appear and help guide people across the road or stop traffic or help you show you where your pans are that you need to pull out that will give you the optimal sauteability for your mushrooms as you're making your chicken and mushrooms. There are ways to fix these kinds of things. Bandwidth will help. It's not the only piece.
Of course, it's not the only, but 120 frames per second, which is what you need for stereoscopic, real-time rendering of meaningful content. That's a heck of a lot of data that needs to be pushed.
Yeah. So, like I said, I think it's going to be a big help.
Yes.
And it's
an enabling technology.
Yeah, it's not crucial too. I think the crucial too is people in general are not going to want to wear a helmet inside of their own workplace or home that's not relevant or appropriate for their role, job, safety, blah, 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 in order to take advantage of this kind of capability.
Exactly.
It'll have to be much more unobtrusive. It'll have to be Snapchat-style sunglasses.
Very little onboard processing capability, very little, and lots of bandwidth. But we can agree to disagree.
Yeah, but people are going to carry their phones everywhere they go anyway. And if you have your phone with you and you've got a high-speed connection via Bluetooth between your device and the phone in your Internet of Things here, it's going to work.
Right. Which is like your phone's going to be on 5G and the connection to the headset will be less.
Provided that the use cases
you ever see a dog go after something and not give up? It's got to have the bandwidth. But now, think about this. Alibaba recently, like yesterday on Black Friday, made a VR shopping experience so you didn't have to go to the mall.
Pray tell.
Pray tell. So this is an article or a story that you heard actually on Marketplace, and they were talking about, let me see, it was Macy's and Target and a few other big retailers enabled a mall-like shopping experience in VR for Chinese customers on Alibaba. And This one was so funny because you and I were talking about this, and again, back to when did this all start? About this time in 2006, we were working on enabling technology to showcase IBM's coming out party at CES in January of 2007, which really was a virtual world reimagining of a Sears store that allowed people to shop together in a virtual space. And I think the biggest difference between what we did 10 years ago and what's going on now with Alibaba is the fact that most of the content now is already digital. And so it's a lot easier to stand up these virtual stores and render out the content in a way that's appropriate and pleasing for the shopping experience. And 10 years ago, I remember spending hours and hours designing a TV stand so that it looked like the one that was in the catalog, so that in the virtual world, people could go up to it and see it from all sides.
Yeah, handcrafting these 3D objects from prims was just an exercise in individual craftsmanship, we'll just say.
Exactly. And now we can do it again, back to the other article, at scale. And now we can we can take this at scale and do it at a much more low cost and quicker deployment than we could in the past.
Right. And using cameras for mobile devices, you can just take a 3D image of a mobile of something wherever you happen to be, scan your way around it and create a 3D virtual object out of it that you can deploy nearly immediately.
Exactly. Very cool. Very cool.
And you combine that with all the other things that we've been talking about for a long time, the My Virtual Models. You connect that with the ability to create an environment on the fly that's targeted to the shopper themselves. You don't have to be in a crowded Black Friday environment where you're virtually elbowing your way forward to the sale rack. The what's presented to you is the environment that you're looking for, that is targeted to you based on your habits, based on your preferences, based on all the good things that you want. So I was intrigued by this particular article. I was kind of half asleep listening to it a little bit. It's like, oh, wait a minute. We've had some interesting experiences around this. And, you know, the world is feels like it's finally catching up to the vision that we had all those years ago.
Many, many, many moons ago. Well, very cool.
Yeah. So I think this brings us to a little bit of the holiday shopping kind of experience that we have, and help us wind up the show on a fun use the force kind of note. So I had seen cross my, you know, hey, you need to buy this stuff immediately set of feeds, something from a company called PropelSW.com.
Very
so
cool.
This is a series of quadcopters done up in the Star Wars style. So you can have the Millennium Falcon, you can have a TIE fighter, you can have an X-Wing, and they are quadcopters. And not only are they little quadcopters that'll fly around, but they also will present you with an opportunity to have live battles. So you can do this with your friends, and you can do this with your enemies, I suppose. So I don't recall how much the price point of these particular items are going to be, but
$1 billion.
I don't know, but it's going to be fun. I mean, this is taking 3D play in a team space to the next level and should be just super amounts of fun.
Yeah, it looks amazing. It looks amazing. Now, I'm sure part of that is really, really good rendering and good production value of the ad, but if you can do Millennium Falcon against multiple TIE fighters, that would be cool.
Yeah, Yeah, and somehow fly around and get your tags in properly. And if there were something around a camera that would allow you to have sort of the cockpit eye view of your, you know, quadcopter flying around, and maybe even have some sort of a, a video experience that you could record, you know, so that you could now post this up on YouTube or something. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, it reminds me of old Dancing with Wookiees, and once it got into the battles in space, you wanted to build up in Star Wars Galaxy to the point where you could afford the Millennium Falcon type model. And then you would have your squad. You get four or five people in it. You'd man the different guns, and you really could get all those different experiences. So it'd be cool if you had a couple of these and you had like six people. You'd have three people on Millennium Falcon and three flying TIE fighters, and have it stream to a common video source so you could like edit together the battle scene. So you can switch from the guns to the pilot to the TIE fighters, etc. That would be awesome.
Very super cool. And and hopefully these things are going to be, you know, what's the right word? You know, strong enough to withstand a couple of Millennium Falcon style crashes.
So it blows up real good.
Well, no, just that when it runs into the ground, you can pick it up again, dust it off, and it'll fly some more, as opposed to being a one shot deal for whatever. Because 35 miles an hour going into the ground.
Yeah, especially plastic.
That could be tricky. Yeah, especially plastic.
Well, I think we're just about out of time. We've got one more thing kind of to wrap up this show. Speaking about the Force.
And IoT.
And IoT.
And something that we've shown before with the Sphero.
Yes, so, this is so
cool. You were the one who was really talking about, hey, isn't this going to be great? You have the Sphero band. You can control the Sphero. You can use the gestures, blah, 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 blah. So when I saw this, speaking of Dancing with Wookiees, the guy in the Wookiee outfit, little video saying, hey, I'm going to now use the force band to control turning on the coffee maker so that it'll start to brew coffee. I think just, you know, it's classic because his partner or wife in this particular little video shows him that he's forgotten to put the beans and the drip filter into the internet-enabled coffee machine. Yes. So even with all this good fun stuff, there are still physical realities like having coffee beans in
coffee beans in the coffee machine. Otherwise, you can turn on the water, but
you can add hot
water. Just going to be hot water. Well, we hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving holiday for those in the U.S. And those in our global audience. I hope you have a great weekend and a great next week, and that you continue to play games at work and tell us all kinds of interesting things that we need to look at, because we would not and could not do this show without you.
Absolutely.
And I think that's it.
Pretty much so. See you guys.
See ya. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.